The rate at which animal species have become extinct within the last 150 years has become a growing cause for concern among the scientific community and the public alike. While most of us are now familiar with the struggle to save larger mammals, such as the giant panda, tiger and gorilla, what is being done to help lesser-known species, like the Yangtze River dolphin and the aye-aye? Julian Powers takes a look at a new initiative to save some of the planet's weirder creatures from the edge of extinction.
These species are on very long branches of the evolutionary tree, so they're very distinctive from the other species that we know. Not only that, they're threatened, so they're very deserving of our conservation attention.
Dr. Ben Collin, research fellow at the Zoological Society of London and specialist on indicators of biodiversity loss. Ben is involved in implementing edge-of-existence conservation projects and undertaking edge research expeditions.
Edge stands for evolutionarily distinct and globally endangered. The reason it's different from other conservation programs that we know of to date is because this information, the information that allows us to construct a tree of life, has only just become available. So for the first time, we can produce a project for which large areas of the academic and conservation world have been calling for quite a long time.
The Edge of Existence program seeks to identify the current status of poorly understood and possibly extinct species. It then develops and implements conservation measures by supporting local scientists to research and conserve worldwide.
Edge species are species which are on a long branch of the evolutionary tree, so they've been evolving for millions of years by themselves. And this means that they, in many cases, look very different from the other species that we know and that we're aware of. But also they're very threatened, so they're being impacted quite heavily by humans.
Well, I've been involved with helping to set up the programme along with everyone else here, and I'm also actively involved with some of the specific conservation projects for some of the top focal edge species which we're working on.
Dr. Sam Turvey, research fellow at the Zoological Society of London. Specialist on mammal conservation and mammal extinctions, Sam is heavily involved with active conservation projects for top edge species.
I've recently returned from a two-month survey for Yangtze River dolphins in China, which was one of the most sad experiences of my life because we weren't able to find any surviving dolphins in the entirety of the Yangtze. It's quite possible that, unfortunately, our top-edge species has already died out, which is not something that a conservationist should ever have to face because these species shouldn't be slipping away unnoticed.
One place tops the list of the world's most biologically diverse countries. Around 75% of the species on this island are found nowhere else on Earth, and they are of great interest to the Edge team. Ben Collin.
Madagascar is quite an interesting place, evolutionarily speaking, and in terms of its conservation, because it fragmented off from Gondwanaland millions and millions of years ago. So it represents a place where there are very, very different species, species which we refer to as being basal. So many of them are sort of close to what we think the primitive forms of certain species might have been. One example is the aye-aye, which is a lemur, and lots of people may have heard of lemurs, but this particular lemur is a nocturnal lemur. Its weird features include big eyes to allow it to see at night, and a very, very elongated middle finger, which it uses to scrape bugs out of bark. It's an interesting species for conservation because it lives at very low population densities, which predisposes it, due to its biology, of being quite threatened.
The aye-aye is currently on the World Conservation Union's red list of threatened species. They are thought to be the most endangered of all mammals in Madagascar. But it turns out there are a couple living a bit closer to home.
So this is our roundhouse building, which is where we keep some of our nocturnal mammals. Obviously, we switch around the day and the night so that they're awake during the daytime rather than the nighttime as they would be normally.
Maggie Lamb, senior keeper at London Zoo, introduced me.
That's the male. His name's Tanny. They go very, you can see the size of his ears, being nocturnal, they go very much by hearing. And also that's how they find their insects. They actually listen out for the noises that the insects will make. The sense of smell is very good as well. And if he turns around, you'll be able to see how big his eyes are. All things common to nocturnal animals.
They look almost more like some sort of giant squirrel. They've got a large black bushy tail and large incisors, which again is very unprimate-like character. It does make them look superficially like a rodent. And as Ben said, they've got a very elongated finger, which is not found in any other primates, and it actually represents convergence on woodpeckers, which don't occur in Madagascar. What's really interesting is that woodpeckers also don't occur in New Guinea, and there, convergently, some of the possums have separately evolved an elongated finger for picking grubs out, but it's actually a different finger. So it shows that this kind of pattern develops in the absence of any competition from birds.
Well, not a lot's known about them because they're so, being nocturnal, they're also very secretive, so they're very hard to study. So it's always a learning process every day for anybody that keeps these animals. But I know that you can see by the way they look, they're very, very odd-looking animals. Look a little bit like gremlins. And I know that the locals actually see them as evil spirits. They're quite frightened of them, so they are killed for that reason sometimes. They're mostly, well, insectivorous, frugivorous, so we give them lots of different types of fruit and vegetables. They like nuts, and, of course, we give them lots of insects, because that's natural for them. Their middle finger on their hands is extremely long and thin, and they use that for tapping on wood and bits of bark to locate insects and grubs and things.
The eye uses its elongated finger very much as a means to explore the world with. So I've seen the eye in the zoo sometimes coming up to the glass and tapping on it with its long finger. So presumably that's very much a way it uses to sense its surroundings.
There's a keeper coming in now. What's she doing there?
She's giving him his afternoon feed. They have their favourite food, so we generally tend to hold the tray out to them and they take what they want and then they run off, and that gives us time and space to spread their other food around. We like to spike it on branches, we bury it sometimes, we just scatter it around the whole enclosure, so they have to take time and effort to find it.
That's the browsing theory.
Yes.
Yeah. I do the same with my hamster.
Tanny is safe with his keeper at London Zoo, but his wild relatives are not so secure. Madagascar is famous for its rare lemurs like the aye-aye. But human encroachment upon their habitat for food production and housing mean that keeping the aye-aye where it belongs is going to be a challenge. Dr. Ben Cullen.
The fundamental point of conservation is to conserve in situ, so we have to conserve species where they live. As a backup, we can have captive breeding programs, and some species lend themselves to that, but others don't do very well. So we have to really address conservation on the ground. But living collections like the one that we have here offer us a means to sort of back that up.
Dr. Sam Turvey.
The story of the Yangtze River dolphin really serves to highlight the fact to the general public that extinctions are happening right now, that most people, I think of extinctions as having happened sometime in prehistory, or alternately, the effects of human actions are going to have increasing impact at some indeterminate point in the future. But it's very difficult for people to really realise or accept that animals are dying out right now. And that's certainly one thing we're trying to address with the EDGE project, is that so many of these species are right on the edge of extinction, and we have to really put conservation measures in practice right away to prevent more tragedies like the story of the Yangtze River dolphin from unfolding in our lifetimes.
The next step for the EDGE project is to ensure that conservation measures get implemented for the focal species that we have listed on the website, and also for the top 100 within the next 5 years. Beyond that, we can take the same technique that we've applied to EDGE mammals and apply it to amphibians. So we will, in time, do the same thing for amphibians, highlighting the most unique amphibians out there which are under the most threat.
I'm going to be involved with hopefully returning to China in the near future, because there's the slight possibility that some Yangtze dolphins do actually survive in some of the tributaries of the Yangtze. So we're planning to do a quite thorough series of fishermen interviews to see if these people who are on the river all the time do have any knowledge of any surviving individuals.
EDGE species have few close relatives and are extremely distinct in the way they look, live and behave. If they disappear, there'll be nothing like them left on the planet. Two-thirds of these animals are receiving little or no conservation. The EDGE project is working closely with scientists from countries in which these creatures are found to try and prevent this. The programme also aims to train students from developing countries to monitor and protect these poorly understood animals like the aye-aye by implementing the research and conservation actions needed to secure their future. And you can find out more about the EDGE project from the EDGE website at www.edgeofexistence.org.